You can.
Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the pissed off boomer of free speech because everything sucks. I'm really sick of it. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send funded to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. The operator standing by. We always shill for RBN. Can I shill for you, Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, if anyone wants, after and only after they've contributed to RBN, to contribute to Patrick and I, go to my profile on the RBN host schedule, and you'll see the email is patrickandjeremyshow@yahoo.com. Email me, and I'll tell you where to mail your contributions or how to cash app it. Those are the basic two ways to contribute at this point. And I'll distribute it with Patrick.
Yeah, because I am kind of a pissed off boomer at this point. I have people call me all day with their problems, and if I have to deal with people's problems, and I've got my own problems, as we all do, and you know, I see people who avoid talking about the really core of the issue. This has been going on for years and years and decades and decades, and they're able to make a fine living. They can cash in for a while, or they make a career out of it. Just randomly, I remember, say, 7 or 8 years ago on Stormfront Radio, somebody mentioning a YouTube channel, Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. And it was just some, I guess, mildly attractive blonde woman who would wear slightly revealing clothes and go through alt-light talking points, always avoiding the, you know, issue of Jewish power. And people liked looking at her talking about these basic bitch talking points, and they would send her money. It was almost like OnlyFans or something, whatever that is. But and then she disappeared. I don't know whatever happened to her. She wasn't devoted to it. Then you got Dr. Duke, for instance. By the way, it's his birthday. He's 75 today, on July 1st, 75. Maybe, you know, you could send him a birthday present too, but I'm not chilling for him today. But it is his birthday, so I'm kind of shelling for him. And he's got cancer. He's had cancer. He's been treating this cancer for, what, like a year and a half? And he's not out of the woods. But yet he won't even stop. He's like the ever-ready bunny. It's like his doctor might say to him, "I'm sorry to say you've got cancer." And he says, "Well, I better hurry up and overthrow these Jews." I mean, that's his whole attitude. He's got to double down, hurry up, and overthrow the Jews that are wrecking our society. I mean, that's how he responds to it. And I'm laughing because it's kind of funny, but it's also very, very sad. So, and you know, fortunately, we don't have cancer, but we're dealing with stuff, and the people who are really dealing with things, we can't monetize this. It's almost impossible. The only thing you can do is what you just did, say, you know, message me or email me and I'll tell you how you can help. And I'm not going to go any more into it. I go on these rants periodically, but it's rough. So I'll kick it back to you and then we'll get into the meat of the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's getting into it right there, what you just said. I mean, to have any kind of platform or make money doing political analysis, you can't touch the third rail. And you know, you're allowed to get real close to it because, you know, part of this Jewish domination of our media, and you're talking about centralized control, how it's not centralized. Well, one way that they maintain control of the media is monetizing those that are willing to take the right. I talk in left and right paradigm because I use that lexicon because it's what people understand. You know, I guess it's, you know, talking to the lowest common denominator, but it's still, I think people understand it better. You know, and on the right, you have majority Republican Party, and then on the left, Democrats. So some people that have broken through that, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tucker Carlson, and even Thomas Massie, who probably couldn't agree on a lot of domestic things if they were put in a room together, they all agree, they seem to be agreeing on, you know, not supporting the Palestinian genocide and not getting into a war for Israel. And these three people that I mentioned have huge, huge followings. They're in the mainstream, and they broke out of mainstream news and politics. That's very phenomenal, and that's exactly what the Jewish establishment is worried about, is people like this that have a huge following and that are now talking, you know, in a manner of, what's the third positionist manner, basically, when you're talking about foreign policy, just keeping it strictly America first, because Trump has redefined America first as Israel first, you know, attacking Iran, that's America first. But what we were mentioning in my show last night is that this attack on Iran, it tested several things. It tested Iran's ability to not only defend itself, but to retaliate. And it was also a test politically of how the American electorate would receive this, would receive going all out with Iran. And it didn't go well, because since October 7th, you have the left collapsing. The Democratic Party in its core were against genocide of Palestinians. They weren't necessarily against Jews or Israel, but now they are. And so you already have the left collapse. And so Jewish power focused on supporting the right, or Trump and MAGA. And now you have MAGA splintered in the wake of this U.S. response to Iran. And that's got them worried. That's why we were reading from the Jerusalem Post last night that waves of anti-Semitism are, you know, rippling through the American electorate. So that's where we were at with that. Let me get your comments on that, and we'll move on.
Okay.
Well, and I got one, just a few more things for you to comment on. All right, AIPAC is openly attacking Thomas Massie, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, a foreign country that's unregistered as a foreign lobbyist, is openly elections and threatening to, you know, get rid of Massie.
Hey, I need to pause this for just a second. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right, we're back.
So, yeah, like I said, AIPAC is openly threatening to primary Massie because of his voting record on issues related to Israel. And so then they run these attack ads. You also have MAGA Kentucky. MAGA Kentucky, who I would argue is a subsidiary of AIPAC and the AJC. They're running hit ads against Massie. And stuff like, well, Massie voted against, you know, Trump's rollback of the woke. Voted against, you know, forcing medical institutes to not do transgender surgeries and that. I mean, you know where I stand on this. I don't believe that we should have state-supported and medical establishment-supported transgender surgeries. That's nonsense. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in Massey's defense, he is an honest libertarian. You know, he believes in no government overreach, like very, very little government overreach, if any. Mm-hmm. And he sees this as government overreach, getting into invading people's private medical lives. It's not that Massie supports transgenderism per se, but he's opposed to government overreach in that matter. And we shouldn't even be having this conversation, in his defense. There should not be a conversation about more than two genders. There should not be a conversation. And when you talk about politics, the government should not interfere in people's medical lives. I agree. But we shouldn't even be having the conversation. When you're talking about the medical establishment, physicians sworn to the Hippocratic Oath, you know, do no harm. You shouldn't have to, there shouldn't be a discussion on whether a doctor, you know, should amputate a little boy's penis and balls, or whether, you know, a little girl should have a mastectomy. That shouldn't even be on the table. But no honest physician should even consider that. It's all politically driven. So in Massey's defense, that's why he voted against those, you know, measures that Trump put out there to roll back the woke. So he is truly a very little to no government intervention in people's private lives. So, but yet they're running attack ads, making him look like that he's for, you know, wokeness. Well, that's only going to backfire, because now he's appealing to the far right and the left. And, you know, he stands as a force to be reckoned with, as someone that could possibly run as a third party and wreck the Republican Party, you know, in 2028.
Well,
so let me kick it to you for a bit.
You know, he could run as a third party. He could easily run as a libertarian, because he seems to be pretty libertarian in his outlook and his philosophy. I think, like, I consider myself just pragmatic. I don't care about ideologies. I don't really have an ideology. I just, but whatever that means. But there is a Libertarian Party, and out of all of the third parties in America, the Libertarian is the third party. It's the biggest of these minor parties. It's the one that's the most capable of getting on the ballot. They typically will get on the ballot in all 50 states. The Green Party, which is the number four party, they usually have trouble getting on the ballot in some of the hardest states, because some states are very difficult. But the Libertarians are the best at it. The Libertarians, in 2016, I think Governor Johnson, it was Governor Johnson, what was his first name? He was a former governor of New Mexico, and then there was Governor Weld, a former governor of Massachusetts, and they were the Libertarian ticket. And I think they got about 2.5%, which is a real big turnout. That was the Hillary Trump election, and so many people were turned off by both Hillary and Trump that the combined third party vote was probably around 4%. It was pretty high. So he could easily, if he wanted, he could probably pretty easily get the Libertarian Party nomination. The Libertarian Party would get him on the ballot in all 50 states, and he could have a pretty legitimate campaign. You look at third parties, Ralph Nader, he never got more than 3%, but he got close to 3% in 2000. That was a big deal, and it certainly played some sort of, you know, if he hadn't been on the ballot, would Gore have beaten Bush? I mean, in the end, Bush beat Gore by virtue of about 500 or 600 votes in Florida. So it was that close. Pat Buchanan also ran in that election, but had heart problems and didn't campaign that much. You go back a little bit further, the election before that, Ross Perot, did he get about 7% of the vote? And in 1992, Ross Perot got something like 19% of the vote. He got close to 20% of the vote. That was the biggest third party turnout or third party vote receival, even though he got no electoral votes, but as a share of the popular votes, that was the most he got since Teddy Roosevelt in 1912 got like over 30% running as a progressive. So, you know, and in 2028, who knows? Is there anybody popular that the Republicans are going to be able to put up? Is there anybody popular that the Democrats are going to be able to put up? He could even be competitive. Because who do the Republicans and Democrats have?
J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio ticket.
Well, those
that's
are
about it.
J.D. Vance, they're not doing a whole lot of polling on 2028, but from what I've heard, J.D. Vance is in front, but not, you know, he might have like 20-something percent support and Rubio in the less than 20%, and then everything else is just split up. So nobody's particularly popular.
Well,
and the Democrats probably even more so. I guess they've got Gavin Awesome.
I think Gavin Awesome's going to be the guy. I mean, he's taking Trump head on and getting a lot of, political kudos. Is that the word? Clout, political clout.
Uh-huh.
Gruesome will be running on the Democrat ticket. But, you know, Massey could be competitive at best, and at worst just be enough to wreck the Republican Party. And because in 2016, I mean, the only reason why the Libertarians and the Green Party didn't wreck the election then is because Trump peeled away so many traditional Democrats who were anti-war and pro-union,
well,
that weren't getting what they needed from the party.
And
a lot
of Democrats would say that they did wreck the 2016 election.
Oh, because and then Russia came in and like interfered and made Trump win.
But there are those who would say that the third parties, the Libertarians and the Greens, wrecked the 2016 election for Hillary.
Oh, for the Democrats.
Made it possible for Trump to win the election with only like 46% of the votes.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, we're talking about a totally new political paradigm here. Trump's already got all the supporters he's going to get. And all the supporters are going to be transferred to Vance Rubio or Trump Jr. I mean, I don't even know. That sounded retarded.
Well,
but
yeah.
Whoever it is, they're not going to have the support that Trump got. They're not going to have that cult of personality.
Trump's support, while it's not as broad as the support that, for instance, Reagan had in 1984 or Nixon had in 1972, it's really deep. his support tends to be really deep, or at least a big hunk of his support is deep. What will be interesting is, as Trump betrays his base, how many people are going to get peeled off because he's betrayed the base, and how many people are just Trump cultists and will support Trump no matter what?
Well, that's what we're talking about in the splintering of MAGA. In the splintering of MAGA, you know, the only ones supporting Trump now are the cultists. I mean, you got a large following in MAGA under Marjorie Taylor Greene and especially Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson would be like number one, Taylor Greene number two. And that's what the Jewish establishment is freaking out about, is that they've already lost the left, the core of the Democrat Party. Now they're starting to lose MAGA mm-hmm. over these Iranian strikes. It's just not popular. And especially since Iran's demonstrated that it is a contender, and Russia and China has demonstrated that they will supply Iran, at least China, because Iran is a huge interest to China in the Belt and Road. There's a lot of investment there. They're not going to let the Iranian administration go down.
Yeah.
So that's why I think we're going to pivot. I think that the establishment's going to pivot to regime change in Iran and get off this war thing. Which, you know, regime change is better than war, but it could be equally devastating. You do have an Iranian resistance there, and probably Mossad-driven, I'm sure. But there's also a lot of young people in Iran. Like, when Israel struck and took out these top military leaders and scientists, who are they going to be replaced by? It could be people even more radical. You know, for the Ayatollah Khamenei, and you're not always sure that you can do a regime change there. That was one point that I wanted to bring up. Did you know who won that strike so far? I mean, the West or Iran, the U.S. and Israel or Iran? Well, what were the objectives from Israel and the U.S.? Kill the Ayatollah. All right, not done. Regime change, not done. Unconditional surrender by Iran, not done. In the nuclear program, not done. And that's what we were just talking about. You know, Trump is saving face saying, oh, we totally struck him and hurt him really bad and set him back. They didn't even penetrate the bunker. So the nuclear program goes on, and you even have headlines of Iran threatening to withdraw from the nuclear treaty agreement.
And
NPT.
Yeah. And you have the example, yeah. You have the example of 20-something years ago of North Korea withdrawing from the NPT and just going ahead and developing and testing nuclear weapons, and it's a fait accompli. They've got nuclear weapons. They've tested the nukes. They periodically test their missiles, much to Japan's frustration or whatever. But and for the time being, they're untouchable because they have nukes. And so the Kim Jong-un, whom Paul Stevens and I refer to him as the adorable leader. I can't remember what his official title is. I think it's something like the revered commander. His grandfather was the great leader. His father, Kim Jong-il, was the dear leader. We call him Kim Jong-un, the adorable leader, but he's got an official title, and it's something like the revered commander. But he's safe because he's got these nuclear weapons, whereas, you know, it's often pointed out that Muammar Gaddafi, whose whatever nuclear program he had wasn't very advanced, but he gave it up, and what happened to him? He got a dagger up the rectum, which is pretty gross. And you know, that's how they killed him. Bad stuff. They've kicked out the International Atomic Energy Agency from Iran because the IAEA was basically operating for the benefit of the Mossad, passing information on to Israel about the whereabouts of Iranian nuclear scientists who were then assassinated. And, you know, the IAEA, Israel's not even a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and yet the Non-Proliferation Treaty and its associated bodies are acting to promote Israeli interests. The whole thing is bizarre, and it's becoming transparent how screwed up the whole Western-dominated rules-based order is, and I think it's going to lead to
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full one-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion-activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
Wake up. Stop wasting your own time. Today, my friends, Americans are more pessimistic about the economy than they have been in a very long time. And it can be soul-crushing to work as hard as you possibly can, still not have enough money for all the bills. If you're feeling a tremendous amount of stress about your finances, you ain't alone. According to a recent survey, approximately half the entire population is struggling with mental health issues due to financial stress. 47% of adults say concerns about money have at least occasionally caused anxiety, stress, worrisome thoughts, loss of sleep, depression, or other effects. That according to Bankrate's latest money and mental health survey. Bankrate? Who in the hell is Bankrate? Call Kettle Moraine Limited today at 602-799-8214. 65% of the people say their biggest concern is inflation and rising prices, and nearly 60% say their stress derives from paying for everyday expenses such as groceries, utilities. 56% say they're worried about having enough emergency savings. 47% are most concerned about being in debt. I like the people that are worried about having enough emergency savings. That's another one of the reasons that you should have been buying gold and silver years ago. Stop worrying about what it's worth from day to day. It's up, it's down, it's inside out. You stop worrying about those things. You can call Kettle Moraine at 602-799-8214 for a private consultation. That's 602-799-8214. Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. Call Kettle Moraine Limited today at 602-799-8214.
And, you know, the IAEA, Israel's not even a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and yet the Non-Proliferation Treaty and its associated bodies are acting to promote Israeli interests. The whole thing is bizarre, and it's becoming transparent how screwed up the whole Western-dominated rules-based order is, and I think it's going to lead to, or it's going to contribute to the downfall of a international system dominated by what we call it, Zio-America. I mean, I'm not going to call it dominated by us or dominated by America, because the United States itself is dominated by Jewish power. But I think in the long run, this is going to be very bad for Jewish power, and a lot of them realize it, and they're in freak-out mode.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about, the political fallout. So, you know, America and Israel understand they can't defeat Iran with just, you know, conventional missile strikes. So the only other option would be for America to lob everything it has and just turn Iran into a glass parking lot. Well, that's not going to be good for the global economic system. So regime change seems to be the only other option. I would look to see the CIA and Mossad put 100% of their efforts into regime change in Iran and trying to do some sort of color revolution. That way they can say, look, the people wanted this. And I don't even know that that's going to work.
Yeah, my feeling is it won't work. My feeling is that this is backfiring. According to Alistair Crook, who has some background, he was a British diplomat, and he's spent a fair amount of time engaged in and physically in the Middle East, including Iran. And what he's saying is that support, not so much for the president, but for the supreme leader, Ayatollah, what's his name, Ali Khamenei, has really never been higher. And the youth support him. I think he's always had a strong base of support in the countryside. To the extent that there are dissidents in Iran, they're probably in Tehran and urban areas. And this is very common. The urban areas and the capital typically has very different politics from the countryside. And you look at America. You know, I mentioned these two landslide elections in 84 for Reagan and 72 for Nixon. But Washington, D.C., if the capital is a measure, then Walter Mondale and George McGovern would have won. Because while Nixon and Reagan won 49 states, in both elections, Washington, D.C. went to their opponents. New York, you know, it's not a state by itself, but New York City routinely goes to the Democrats, no matter how bad the election is for the Democrats. So these major cities aren't a reflection of the sentiment of the country as a whole, not in America and not in other countries. But you will see the thing is the color revolutions can succeed. They can succeed based on what goes on in the capital city. And so you've had Viktor Yanukovych overthrown in Ukraine, basically twice. I mean, he won the 2004 election, but then because of the Orange Revolution, a color revolution if there ever was one, they did a revote, and in the revote he lost. In 2014, he was already president, and he'd even already agreed to resign, and yet they overthrew him and the system. But these revolutions, so-called revolutions, took place in the capital city, and they weren't popular in much of the rest of the country. Therefore, you know, the Donbass and Crimea promptly declared independence. Tehran, you've had attempts at color revolutions. There was one of the presidential elections. After Ahmadinejad had been president for his 8 years, there was a presidential election, and I believe, what was it, Khatami? One of these clerics won, but they tried to say it was fake, and there were demonstrations in Tehran that didn't succeed. You've seen these demonstrations in Minsk against the great comb-over, Alexander Lukashenko. And you can get people out in the street in Minsk. You've got it going on. But in the country as a whole, he's very popular. The urban areas and the capital city tend to be different. And right now, as we speak, you've got it going on in Belgrade, in Serbia. And these urban, you know, capital city-based revolutions, well, the capital cities are the places that are most easily accessible to the American embassies, for instance, to the you know, the CIA's based in American embassies. So I'm just raising some of these points.
I mean, you look at America as an example. You can't really do a revolution in the rural areas. Nobody's going to pay attention to the small town capital, you know, or, you know, Capitol buildings, courthouses. And it's not like you can go to Walmart in the rural areas of America and do revolution. Walmart can just ask you to tell you to leave and have the sheriff, like, escort you out. So it's going to be in, like, Lexington, Louisville, Frankfort, in Kentucky, and then, you know, in the big cities that people are going to demonstrate, if they're going to demonstrate. So I would imagine that's probably similar in Iran. But, like, what if even they did overthrow the Ayatollah Khamenei? And who's to say that another more radical Iranian nationalist party wouldn't take power? And you can move from a theocracy to Iranian nationalism, which is definitely not what a Jewish establishment wants, or Israel. That would be tantamount to another Hitler Germany Third Reich.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full 1-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion activated at furion.com. That's furion.com. That's furion.com.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Howdy, cousins. This is RBN host Blackbird 9, a.k.a. Frederick C. Blackburn, asking you to please support the Republic Broadcasting Network. Every day, RBN's mission is to use our collective voices to spread truth and relevant information, to gain a deeper understanding of the adversary, and to gain knowledge for survival against the gradual erosion of the Republic. But in order to sustain this incredible communications network, RBN needs your financial contributions. To donate, visit republicbroadcasting.org, call 1-800-724-2719, or mail your donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
What if even they did overthrow the Ayatollah Khomeini, and who's to say that another more radical Iranian nationalist party wouldn't take power, and you can move from a theocracy to Iranian nationalism, which is definitely not what a Jewish establishment wants, or Israel. That would be tantamount to another Hitler Germany, Third Reich.
And in Iran, I don't even know how much of a tension there is between theocracy and Iranian nationalism.
It's almost the same, isn't it?
Yeah, I think over the past 45 years, they've been fused to a large extent. You know, Iran is the, you know, it's a successor of the Persian Empire. And the name Iran, actually, it comes from the same root word as the name for Ireland. Ireland and Iran both come from the Indo-European word that also produced Aryan. I don't know how you'd say nobody really knows how the ancient Proto-Indo-European word would have sounded, but they do all have the same roots, Aryan, Ireland, and Iran. And when the term Iran replaced the term Persia in the outside world, this was under the reign of the father of the so-called Shah of Iran. There was the Shah of Iran who was deposed by the Iranian Revolution, the Islamic Revolution, in I think it was the end of 1978. His name was Mohammad Reza Shah. His father was, I believe, just called Reza Shah or Reza Pahlavi. It was the Pahlavis. His father was not an aristocrat. His father was a military officer, and I don't even think a particularly high one. but he was able to do some sort of coup d'etat and overthrow the monarchy, what, in the 20s or the 30s, and establish himself as a new monarch, and he established a new dynasty. And then when World War II came around, and he used the term Iran, which is based on the word Aryan, and I don't think it was a coincidence that he was pro-German in World War II, because he was pro-German, and because Iran was being used as a conduit for aid from the United States to get into the Soviet Union to fight against Germany. The Americans and the British joined with the Soviets in effectively occupying Iran during World War II, deposing Reza Shah or Reza Pahlavi, yeah, and installing his teenage son as a figurehead. So there's that history. Where was I going with this? But Iran has can trace its political entity back through the Persian Empire to long before Islam. But
yeah, we were talking about the Iranian nationalism.
Yeah, so there's an Iranian nationalism that goes farther back than Islam. But Iran, that area, has been Islamic since what, the 7th century or so, and so
yeah, that's Shia, right?
Yeah, and so
Shia dominated.
If you're talking about 13 or 14 centuries, you can develop an identity within 13 or 14 centuries. You can develop a pretty strong identity.
It may be Shia dominated, but you know, Jews and Christians also have a representation there. I mean, that's one thing that Dr. Duke pointed out, you know, in his talks about Iran. So religion, you know, yeah, they're under theocracy, but there is a sense of nationalism there in conjunction with that. And you want to talk about biblical, you know, it traces back to the Table of Nations in Genesis 10, the descendants of Elam, who would be one of Shem's sons. So a large portion of Persia was Semitic at the height of the Persian Empire when they conquered the southern kingdom of Judah. And when they conquered the Babylonian Empire, which conquered the southern kingdom of Judah. So this would be in the last days of the prophet Daniel. So they're a mixture of Shem and Japheth, or Japheth, the European peoples. Iran seems to be a mixture of them. And so, you know, you talk about nationalism. I think they would be predominantly, yeah, Aryan. Aryan is a good way to describe them. I mean, that's where the Aryan peoples originated, right?
Well, so the Indo-European people originated somewhere in the steppe region, like near the Black Sea, the Caspian Sea, probably north of the Caucasus Mountains. But once you go on the other side of the Caucasus Mountains, there's Iran. So they would have originated very close to there. This is very close to their origin. Their origin would be more or less southern Russia or Ukraine, or maybe the western part of Kazakhstan. That might have been where the Indo-European Yamnaya people originated from. But Iran's very close to there, and the Persian language or Farsi, it's definitely an Indo-European language that's been recognized for centuries because it's grammatical and lexicographical, is that what you say? Lexiconical similarities to English and ancient Greek and Latin and Sanskrit. They've been recognized for hundreds of years. What was I going to say?
What did you mention about Kazakhstan?
Oh, so if you look on the map, or better yet, a globe, because the world is spherical, you look at the globe, you see there's a very large country called Kazakhstan, which was the Kazakh Soviet Socialist Republic back in the Soviet Union days. So it's and it's large. It would be one of the 10 largest countries on Earth by land size. It's smaller than India, but it might be around number 8 or number 9. I think it's larger than Algeria. It's a large country, and it's not very well populated. But the in its far west, it borders on, depending on when your map or globe is from, the Aral Sea. But the Aral Sea is pretty much dried up because of intense irrigation. But it used to be, the Aral Sea used to be a large landlocked salty or brackish lake, And that's very close to this region where the Indo-Europeans would have come from. And people have a pretty good idea of where they came from, because you can look at the words. And if you find in ancient Greek and, you know, Old English and Latin and Sanskrit and Persian, if you find words that are the same for, you know, honey, or the same for birch tree, or, you know, if they're the same for something, that means that that's probably an Indo-European word. And the Indo-Europeans would have words for things that existed around them, right? And if they have the same word for birch tree, then they would have evolved. They would have originated in an area that has birch trees. And if you go down to maybe, you know, like a Turkey, maybe you're not finding birch trees, that type of thing. And so it's not 100% certain where they came from, but there's a fair amount of linguistic and archaeological and more recently genetic evidence that puts them in that area north of the Caucasus Mountains in the southern steppes around where Ukraine, southern Russia, and western Kazakhstan come together. Is that what you want to
know? I asked because Kazakhstan, I mean, that's where the biblical nation of the Medes would be right now. And, you know, in the book of Daniel in the Old Testament, the Medes and the Persians teamed up together and conquered the Babylonian Empire, mm-hmm. dominating the Middle East at the time, roughly 500 BC. So the Medes and the Persians, or Kazakhstan and Iran, would share a lot of genetic and linguistic characteristics. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the what's happened since those times? You had Genghis Khan. When was Genghis Khan? He was like the 7th century or something, and he was from Mongolia, and which is substantially farther east. It's, you know, it's in the interior of Asia. It's in the same latitudes as where Kazakhstan is now, more or less the same latitudes as the area north of the Kazakh Mountains, Caucasus Mountains, but it's between Siberia and China. And with the rise of Genghis Khan and the Mongols sweeping over big hunks of the Eurasian landmass, nearby, well, the Mongols have some kind of relation to these Asiatic Turkic people, like the Uyghurs. I like to call them the Uyghurs, the Uyghurs, or the what else is it? The Uzbeks and the the kind of Asiatic people, Turkic language, and they wound up they're co-conquerors of these big land masses. And they got into Turkey. Well, by the time they got into Turkey, they mixed so much with the existing people that while Turkish is a language that can be called related to the Uyghur language or these languages, what are some of the other? You've got Kyrgyz, right? But it's not mutually intelligible. The Turks are the best known of these Turkic people. But the Turks are, you know, they're the at the far west of the of this realm, and their origins were really Asiatic. I mean, you look at them; they look pretty white, kind of swarthy, but pretty white nowadays. But they're the if you looked at their Y chromosomes, they are at least partly descended from these Asiatic people. So these Asiatic people swept across that region. So if you went to that region now, You might not find people who were descendants from the Medes, because the descendants from the Medes were probably displaced. But that would be several centuries after the biblical events. Yeah.
Well, when you're looking at people in Iran, like their physiognomy, is that the word?
Close enough.
They look Mediterranean. They look like Southeastern European. They look like Italians. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was a far. We went far afield, but we were just talking about Iranian nationalism. Pretty much in agreement with the theocracy. So if you overthrew the theocracy, you're not going to make any strides.
No. It might be like going
even
from,
if they
maybe like going from Putin to Medvedev.
Speaking of which, we're talking about the American political fallout in these U.S.-Iranian strikes and counterstrikes. Did you catch this thing that Medvedev says that countries are lining up to sell Iran nukes?
Yeah.
Did you see? And then Trump responded to that. Let's see. I had it pulled up here, but my mouse is going everywhere on this computer. So following the recent U.S. airstrikes on Iranian nuclear facilities, former Russian President Medvedev claimed that some countries are ready to directly supply Iran with warheads. He didn't specify which countries, but, I mean, what's implied there is that there are many countries, I mean, maybe even like Pakistan and China, that would be willing to supply Iran should this thing escalate. In response to Israel and the U.S., you know, Medvedev, he doesn't hold back, does he?
No.
That's Putin's assassination insurance right there, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. He ought to be. He ought to be.
It's power. God help the West.
Yeah. Well, okay. So Pakistan is a Muslim country, and it has a long border with Iran. And they have expressed sympathy and solidarity with Iran. And they've got at least several dozen nuclear warheads themselves. So they were mentioned early on. China and Russia probably would not want Iran to... China and Russia are members of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and one of the objectives of the Non-Proliferation Treaty is to keep nuclear weapons limited to those five countries that, coincidentally or not, are the permanent members of the UN Security Council, which would be Russia, U.S., China, France, and England. France has their own force. England, you know, England has nuclear weapons, but I'm not even sure if they can launch them without American approval. So I'm not even sure if they have an independent nuclear force. I'm not clear on that. But Pakistan's outside of it. They never signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And as I mentioned earlier, North Korea dropped out of it, developed their nuclear weapons. And North Korea's had a lot of technological exchanges with Iran. So maybe the implication is that North Korea could supply Iran with nuclear weapons. They've helped them with their missile program. The North Koreans are really good at both nuclear weapons and missiles. And so maybe they're being mentioned. While we still have a little bit of time, I want to mention a little bit about the Iranian constitution. When I taught at the university, I taught classes, among others, on religion and politics. And being that I don't know a whole lot about religion, I concentrated on some of the political aspects of religion. And every year, I spent at least a full day on Iran. And Iran's a very interesting case. And I'm interested in constitutions. You know, I've read the American Constitution, a couple of the Soviet constitutions, the North Korean Constitution, which was pretty interesting, Japanese Constitution, the Iranian Constitution, I think maybe one of the French Constitutions. I'd read them. The Iranian Constitution is really interesting, and actually, you know, it provides for all sorts of elections. And Ayatollah Khomeini, the first supreme leader, was elected by popular vote. His successors are elected, and there's only been one successor, which is the current Ayatollah Khamenei, who's been in office since 1988. And he is in for office for life. It's a lifetime appointment. But he is elected by a council of experts. But the council of experts is elected by popular vote. The presidents are elected by popular vote, although the council of experts has the authority to strike people from the ballot. And they use that authority sometimes if they don't think they're acceptable. But of course, you know, we've got effective, we get people kicked off the ballots. I can guarantee you that in our system, the Jewish power and even non-Jewish power will get people kicked off the ballots. But so they have a constitution, and the constitution allows for a great deal of electoral input. So this idea that somehow Western countries are democratic and Iran is a theocracy and they're just completely different, you can make a very strong case that the will of the people as measured through fair elections probably reflects more in the Iranian system than it does in the American system. I think you could make that case. So I'm just saying that I'll kick it back to you. I don't know how familiar you are with this.
Well, no, yeah, that was educational for me. You look at, the Sunnis. I mean, they're the most radical, really, of Islam. And Saudi Arabia, not only, according to our own Congress, funded 9/11, and the majority of the hijackers were Sunni. But yet we're focusing on Iran here, which is closer to Western democracy than Saudi Arabia ever has been or probably will be. So there's that.
Yeah. Saudi Arabia was really the last country on earth to have even a pretense of democracy. Because the Soviet Union, all throughout the Soviet Union, you always...
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it. Contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, dixierepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
You know, but yet we're focusing on Iran here, which is closer to Western democracy than Saudi Arabia ever has been or probably will be. So there's that.
Yeah. Saudi Arabia was really the last country on earth to have even a pretense of democracy. Because the Soviet Union, all throughout the Soviet Union, you always had elections. The elections, there was typically just one candidate on the ballot, and you'd vote yes or no, and people were afraid to vote no. But you at least had that kind of pretense. Saudi Arabia had zero elections for anything until maybe the 1990s. They started having elections for like municipal offices or something like that. But at the national level, there's not even a pretense of elections.
Well, it's a good talking point when you're talking to your American Patriot friends that are wanting to go to war with Iran. I mean, it's like, all right, why? Well, because they're not a democracy. They have all these human rights violations. Well, what about Saudi Arabia? And you'll just see this blank stare come over their face because they don't even know anything about Saudi Arabia. They don't understand anything about that. The Sunnis are way more hardcore radical than the Shiites. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. So why the allegiance between Israel, the U.S., and Saudi Arabia? Well, I mean, petrodollar, gold, oil, money, I mean, all of that comes into play.
Well, here's one other thing. You've got, okay, our democracy values. We need to support Israel because of our democracy values. Well, okay, so if Israel keeps electing politicians, both, you know, Netanyahu and his opponents, and they all support genocide, and they all support conquering the territory of their neighbors, and they all support infinity wars and dragging America into them, that's what the Israeli electorate votes for. Is it good that it's a democracy? If this is what the Israeli people want, does that make it a good thing? Just because this is what the Israelis want, they want to genocide, they want to conquer. Does the fact that they have a democratic system and it reflects the will of the people, does that make it all good?
That's the question. What, you know, we just assume, you know, we're told to assume that democracy and republic is a good thing. Is it good for all peoples? Did it work out well for the blacks in Africa? No, they respond better to a caliphate, a strong fist, a harsh government, because of their group behaviors. You know, that if you don't cover the women up and make them be escorted by a man, they could be raped. So that's why a caliphate works best in Africa, and why democratic republics works best for Western Europeans.
Yeah, and then once you get a whole bunch of non-Western Europeans into the same political entity, now you've got tons of people from Muslim regions or other regions. Is it going to continue to work?
Yeah, yeah. And what do? They take over large sections of the West and they form caliphates because that's the only thing they know.
Well, we are pretty
they
much...
They form no-go zones.
Yeah, we're pretty much at the end of the show.
All right. Thanks, Patrick. It's been classy, and I hope you stay classy.
Yeah, and people can get in touch with you through the Patrick and Jeremy Show at, what is it?
Patrick and Jeremy Show at yahoo.com. Go to my profile page on host schedule on RBN and email me. And if you want to contribute to Patrick and I after you've contributed to RBN, I'll tell you how to do that.
Yeah, contribute.
Where to mail it to.
Contribute to Jeremy. I gave up on seeking contributions to myself, so contribute to Jeremy. And it's Patrick and Jeremy Show, not the Patrick, but Patrick and Jeremy Show, correct? At yahoo.com.
Yeah, Patrick and Jeremy Show at yahoo.com.
Okay, good. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You can't-
handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.